Today, they had another go at it with some strict mute button rules in place just in case. It was the final US presidential election debate. The first in September erupted into a chaotic shouting match, and the second was called off, and each did their own town hall meeting. Trailing in opinion polls with the November 3rd election just 11 days away, US President Donald Trump was under pressure to perform well during his final debate against Democratic rival Joe Biden. A record 47 million Americans have already cast ballots, eclipsing total early voting from the 2016 election. Well, joining me now to talk about today's debate and the run-up to the presidential election is Associate Professor Brendan O'Connor from the United States Studies Centre at the University of Sydney. Good evening, Brendan.
Good to talk with you.
You too. How do you rate today's debate between President Trump and contender Joe Biden?
Well, it wasn't the kind of trolling and bullying exercise that we saw in the first debate. The first debate was really so unedifying, and it was hard for even me, who sort of does it for my job and gets paid to watch these types of things, to persist with it. It was, it was just so little substance. There was just a havoc sort of machine that Trump was. The moderator lost control for the first half of the debate, gained some of it later on. This time round, the rules were much more sensible, the sense that at least both candidates had a chance to say something for a couple of minutes to a question. And then there was some backwards and forth, but the moderator did a great job. There wasn't a huge amount of substance. Trump made all sorts of claims that he was the least racist person in the auditorium, although there was an African-American moderator, that he was, a great friend to all sorts of minorities, that he loved the environment, that he was this and he was that. A lot of lies and things that I think people from outside of America would find very hard to believe, that he was on top of COVID. He'd done a fantastic job. Biden, not hugely impressive, but the bar is pretty low for him. If he doesn't come across as stumbling too much, if he pulls together a few sentences, I think people generally think he's, done a good job. So it wasn't, one of the great sort of ideas fests, but it was at least a little more civil than the first debate, which was a great relief.
Brendan, the subject of COVID was first up with the president downplaying it and pointing fingers at China again. What is he doing when he attacks China, calling it the China virus? Who's he actually trying to appeal to here?
Well, Trump's got a long way on xenophobia. He started his campaign by blaming Mexicans for the loss of jobs and for crime in the United States, banning Muslims from coming to the United States. I was looking at figures on refugees coming to the United States at the moment, just well down, hundreds of thousands of refugees less over the last couple of years than Obama was taking when he was president. So there's an approach Trump has often tried, is to sort of blame it on other people. It's kind of very sort of thinly veiled racism, and also have the sense that Biden wasn't going to act as swiftly to begin with. The thing that never got really fully discussed in both the first debate and this one was the sense that, okay, no one at the beginning maybe was totally on top of this issue in February, March, but there's a lot of learning that can occur in the months between that, up to October now. But there just doesn't seem to have been a learning from other countries. There just seems to be this constant talk from Trump that the virus is, that he's on top of the virus, that it's going away, it's going down. Whereas looking at the figures today, and it's 60 or 70,000 a day at the moment of infections, the death rate's getting back up to 1,000 a day in the United States. So listening to that, I think outside of America is kind of wincing kind of words, where inside of America, I think there's a tolerance for the coronavirus that's just very hard to conceive of out of a place like New Zealand, maybe even more so than Australia, the sense of how people have become to put up with this thing that is, partly something that was out of control, but also a lot of mismanagement.
Biden didn't attack China over COVID, but he did over international affairs. He said he would bring China into line. And there was quite a bit that he actually said there when he called Kim Jong-un a thug, and he said that Trump's relationship with him was like having a relationship with Hitler.
Yes, I mean, Biden was walking this fine line that he wanted to be critical of Trump's early approach to the coronavirus, saying that he believed Xi Jinping and he was naive to do this. but there was also a need not to be xenophobic about this. So it was, he was trying to, I think, portray himself, though, more of a man of international cooperation, that he'd rely on alliances, the United Nations, bring America back into a more traditional foreign policy rather than Trump's much more personalized foreign policy. It's his erratic responses to allies, and the fair point that Biden made, that Trump seems to be more comfortable with strong men and dictators and autocrats rather than the leaders of democratic nations. You know, a pot shot at the Prime Minister of New Zealand or Canada France or Germany, the Chancellor, if he sees fit, where he seems to have a comfort with Putin, Erdogan, and Kim Jong-un. So that was a point that Biden made a number of times.
And Donald Trump, throughout this debate, he attacked Biden as a man who was ineffectual during his time in office as vice president. And he accused him of being a politician, which then he made the point that he wasn't. Do you think this is an effective strategy for him or for the people of America?
It might have been in more normal times. You know, Biden has been around in American politics for an extraordinary amount of time. Enters the U.S. Senate as a 30-year-old, has an incredibly long career dating from the early 70s to becoming vice president in 2008. So it is, you know, 47 years in office. You know, that is a record that's got its ups and downs inevitably. And there is a lot to be sort of, you know, a lot of fault to be found in Biden's record and questions asked about, well, why wasn't more achieved under Obama's presidency? But in comparison to the Trump record, it looks a record of significant achievement. And Biden was occasionally, I think, able to effectively say, look, we got the, you know, incarceration rate down, or we got the economy going again after the recession of 2008. So Biden, you know, he's not as fast on his feet as many would hope. Maybe Joe Biden of 20 years ago would have, I think, been able to push back against Trump a little more. He's the compromise candidate. He's a sort of the Democrats playing it very safe. It's hard to see him being president for more than 4 years if he is successful. So it feels like a bit of an attempt to sort of go back to something, the Obama-Biden administration, just without Obama this time, and to offer some kind of reassurance of the fact that he's been around for so long is what Americans need after a period of extreme inexperience.
Well, let's look at President Trump's performance today. Did we see a different side to him, or was it business as usual?
Well, I think one of the sort of problems with kind of media analysis, because there are these extraordinary moments with Trump, you know, traveling, having a drive-by of his own hospital, the Walter Reed Hospital, appearing on the balcony of the White House, sort of in the style of General Pinochet, that when he acts more calmly, as he did today, spoke more sort of softly, didn't interrupt, there's a sense of, oh, that's somewhat presidential. But as I said before, there are a lot of lies and mistruths. There was a lot of scuttlebutt about Joe Biden's son, allegations that need more evidence to be substantiated, presenting Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, as little better than a kind of mafia operator trading on his father's name, getting ill-gained money, and Trump talking about laptops that have appeared in the middle of the night with incriminating evidence on them. So a lot of stuff that we would really call kind of conspiracy theories that had come out of anyone other than the president. So I think there's a need to be very careful with this analysis of Trump, that he has kind of more elevated Twitter style or his trolling style of the first debate does, I think, lead to this sort of kind of a view that if he's a little more contained, if he talks more civilly, then, oh, well, he's not as bad as everyone said he is. But the bar is set very low in this regard. So I think it is difficult when you've got someone who puts so much information forward, which doesn't really ally with any evidence or facts. But, you know, when they're saying the lies more reasonably, do we say, oh, well, you know, he could be worse.
And Joe Biden committed to changing from oil to solar and wind. That was a big call.
Yes, I mean, it's been on his website. You know, Biden one of the fascinating things about the Biden-Harris ticket has been in the debates, and really since Harris was put on the ticket, this want to really play it safe. So most of their convention speeches, the vice presidential debate, the first presidential debate, there's this want to sort of tack to the center and say, look, we're not radicals. No one has to worry about fracking or about us changing things too much or packing the court or whatever it might be. We're just, you know, we're going to be the reassuring hand that, you know, you would have got with Hillary Clinton or you would have had under Barack Obama. So there hasn't been a want to say, okay, maybe there is a need to do things pretty differently. And you've got a bit of that on, you've always had that on the website. So if you looked at the Biden website, there was this commitment to the Paris targets, to zero emissions by 2050, getting rid of all forms of kind of energy reliance by about 2035 in the United States, sort of making the United States on its energy reliance carbon neutral. So these things have been promised on the website, and I think Biden was drawn into articulating them today. He didn't always do the best job of making the case for them, but I think he's got them out there, and it's pretty important that they're on the record, because I think people will want, you know, all the craziness of the campaign is over if he wins, say, so, look, these are targets worth sort of holding to. They send a signal, I think, to countries like Australia and New Zealand to say, look, these are the targets which the United States will be for. Australia hasn't committed to those targets. New Zealand has. So, that, you know, sometimes things said in presidential debates are worth listening to, and those were probably two examples. Obama said he'd negotiate with Iran. People sort of jumped at that. He also said he'd use drones in Pakistan without authorization. Those were two things that he did and were worth listening to at the time.
And finally, Brendan, do you think that this debate is going to be a game changer for those swing voters?
Well, it's incredibly hard to think that there are people after Donald Trump has been around for 4 years, almost as president, who are thinking, I'm not so sure. You know, I don't really know if I think, you know, positively or negatively about Donald Trump, but it is probably these either independents or Republicans who generally think, from the evidence we have, I don't really like the personality of Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump's style is aggravating, but I'm not sure about the policies of the Democrats. So I think there's probably a surveyed group of people, probably smaller and smaller each week, and probably smaller than in previous elections, who are probably historically Republicans or independents that lean towards the Republican Party, who've maybe been put off by the scandals, the style, the turnover of staff, the ineptitude of really of just being able to run a competent administration. So those people are probably more wavering than you know, anyone else. There's probably, you know, it is remarkable, though, to believe that people are still unsure of what to make of Donald Trump, when I think most of us in the rest of the world have either a pretty polarised view. You know, I don't think there's that many people in the middle that I come across in Australia, and probably not in New Zealand, who say, I'm just not sure about Donald Trump. I haven't really made up my mind.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Brendan.
My pleasure.